is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special show produced in advance for today. I'm Yehiyes Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The few hospitals not damaged or destroyed in the region were packed with war wounded, including children who had been stabbed, shot, or become victims of newly laid landmines.
That's VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch on the war in Ethiopia. All these and more coming up on African News Tonight as we take a deep look at two of the biggest crises on the African continent. What began as a conflict between the Ethiopian federal government and a regional militia in late 2020 exploded this year into a civil war that has forced 2 million people to flee their homes and left hundreds of thousands in famine-like conditions. The war expanded through the year with displacements, ethnic killings, and mass rape in the increasingly devastated region. Then, this week, the Tigray People's Liberation Force in Ethiopia said they will leave the Amhara and Afar region and withdraw to the Tigray region to foster a negotiated peace to end the war against federal forces. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more on the year of conflict.
By the beginning of 2021, the war in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, then more than a month old, had forced tens of thousands of people to flee across the border to Sudan. Refugees reported ethnic massacres, sexual assaults, and mass arrests. In the months that followed, the humanitarian crisis deepened. More than 1 million people were displaced inside Ethiopia, and aid workers warned of looming famine. The few hospitals not damaged or destroyed in the region were packed with war wounded, including children who had been stabbed, shot, or become victims of newly laid landmines. 11-year-old Goitaum lost one leg and now suffers from infection and nightmares. Goitaum's father, Gabriel Hannes Atakelti, says his son was taking the goats to graze when he stepped on a landmine. Goitaum is too weak to speak. The war broke out in the Tigray region in late 2020 between the federal government and local Tigrayan forces. It quickly expanded to include other regional forces allied on both sides and Eritrean forces fighting with the government. Both sides have been accused of massacres, torture, and other atrocities. Federal Ethiopian and Eritrean forces have also been accused of systematic mass rape. Hundreds of women and girls have come forward, and aid workers say many, many more have not.
All survivors say they were raped by militaries.
Mihira Radai is a caseworker for sexual assault victims in Aydar Referral Hospital in Makala, Tigray's regional capital. She says many women who are raped by soldiers are often afraid to come forward, and many others have no access to health care. A national election in June reestablished the authority of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, who then had control of the Tigray region. About a week later, Tigrayan forces recaptured the region, and the war escalated, now engulfing many areas beyond Tigray. Abiy has vowed to crush his enemies.
Access by independent monitors has been a major challenge. Reportedly, many have been...
On December 17th, the United Nations voted to investigate abuses by both sides of the conflict, including the reported mass detentions of as many as 7,000 people allegedly sympathetic to Tigrayan interests, among them 9 UN workers. In the battered Tigrayan countryside, many say they have seen so much tragedy, they no longer fear arrest. Haftum Gidey, a resident of the war-torn town of Housen, says he no longer fears war or arrest. He has seen too much already. Mass graves litter the countryside as massacres continue here and in neighboring regions. Refugees are still fleeing to Sudan, and many areas are cut off from humanitarian aid. Hundreds of thousands of people are living in famine-like conditions, and the UN now says at least 2 million people in 3 Ethiopian states have fled their homes. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
The United States has said it hopes the TPLF withdrawal to their northern stronghold opens the door to broader diplomacy. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the U.S. would welcome a withdrawal if it happens. However, the State Department said it could not confirm that the TPLF forces have left the Amhara and Afar regions. Not long ago, Ethiopia emerged as a bastion of hope in Africa. In 2018, there was an unexpectedly peaceful transfer of power to a coalition led by one of the youngest leaders on the continent, Abiy Ahmed. He released thousands of political prisoners and invited exiled political parties back to Ethiopia. Abiy even won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2019. This year, however, he faced accusations of gross human rights violations as his forces fought a bitter battle against the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Darren Taylor reports.
The seeds for Ethiopia's latest conflict were sown early in Abiy's rule. He blamed the TPLF for violence, corruption, and human rights abuses during its near three-decade time in power. In contrast, Abiy cast himself as a liberal democrat reformist, even while he too jailed opponents. In June, after 7 months of fighting, the TPLF drove the federal army and allied Eritrean troops from Tigray and began advancing on Addis Ababa. Abiy's forces have since forced the TPLF to retreat. Senior Ethiopia analyst for the International Crisis Group, William Davison, says the ongoing conflict shows the international community doesn't have much leverage in such situations.
Those concerns about an enduring conflict, one which involved lots of atrocities, to some degree, you know, committed by all sides, but you know, particularly by Eritrea and Amhara and federal forces in the first few months of the war. But all those concerns and desires to get a ceasefire and the Ethiopian parties to return to dialogue, well, they've made very little impact on the Ethiopian protagonists here. Let alone on Eritrea's president, Isaias Afwerki.
In late November, the World Food Programme said almost 9.5 million people across northern Ethiopia were in danger of starving. The federal government has blockaded the Tigray region. The United Nations says relief groups have been prevented from reaching famine-ravaged areas. Children are dying of malnutrition. Dozens of countries have expressed concern, including the United States, where President Joe Biden's government has called for a ceasefire. But Davison says the international response to the crisis has been essentially ineffective.
When the Biden administration came into power, it's much more about, you know, how long is this conflict going to go on for, about the rapes, the looting, the role of Eritrea, and the denial of humanitarian access, the massacres. So the Biden administration, for various reasons, to some extent prioritized this. Because of those concerns, they leaned heavily on the federal government and criticized them, although recently they tried to be much more even-handed in their criticism.
Abiy's administration says it's fighting a just war against treasonous terrorists.
They have been outraged in Addis Ababa at this positioning of the U.S., and that's led to a real plummeting of relations, especially as the U.S. has stepped up its efforts by threatening, not really carrying out, punitive action. That's, you know, convinced people in Addis that the U.S. is leading some sort of global conspiracy against Ethiopia.
Davison says it's hard to see anything but more conflict in the months ahead.
The Tigray forces are on the back foot for now, but there's no reason that I can see that they can really be completely defeated or that they will surrender.
He's concerned that a deepening war will spark the involvement of more actors.
That's why there's such a necessity here. Or, you know, maybe the Tigray leadership to recognize the legitimacy of the federal government, which they withdrew after the constitutional dispute. Addis Ababa to do all it can to reconnect Tigray, to alleviate the humanitarian situation there.
Davison says in the absence of such conciliatory steps, the world's going to witness even more destruction in Ethiopia in 2022 and possibly for years into the future. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says nearly 30 million people are in urgent need of humanitarian assistance in Ethiopia, including over 15 million children. This, as the Horn of Africa nation continues to face its worst humanitarian crisis in decades. However, as the situation in northern Ethiopia continues to evolve, more children are expected to suffer from the devastating impact of the conflict between Ethiopian government forces and those from the Tigray region. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, a senior UNICEF official said conflict is worsening the situation. Gianfranco Rotigliano is the interim UNICEF representative in Ethiopia.
The situation is serious because that in Ethiopia there's a conflict that has been going on for some time. So now things have deteriorated and we have more than almost 30 million people in need, and out of those, the half are children. So the situation requires a very swift action.
Ethiopia is facing a number of challenges, including conflict across regions, climatic shocks, a slowing economy, and public health emergencies that have increased food insecurity, displacement, and protection from conflict. According to the UN, there are over 4 million internally displaced persons in Ethiopia. Rotigliano says the spreading conflict is expected to increase those numbers in the coming year.
The most affected region are the northern regions, meaning the region Amhara, Afar, and Tigray, affected by the recent conflict. But there is a lot of problems also in other regions. In Somali region, we have a drought going on now, which touches also on Afar, going towards sure a humanitarian crisis as well.
Access to affected populations is limited and the presence of humanitarian workers is diminishing due to insecurity and operational constraints. Across Ethiopia, more than 1 million children under 5 years of age require treatment for severe acute malnutrition, while 1.5 million children aged 6 to 59 months are missing out on routine immunizations. The interim UNICEF representative says 5 million children require emergency water and sanitation, and nearly 6 million women are victims of gender-based violence requiring emergency support. Meanwhile, the UN Children's Fund is appealing for $350 million to meet the increasing humanitarian needs across Ethiopia. Rotigliano, who previously coordinated UNICEF's response to Ebola outbreak in West Africa and the Democratic Republic of Congo, offered more details.
This is $100 million more than what we requested in 2021. Just to give you an example, it is projected that in 2022, 10 million people will lack access to safe water. Almost 6 million children and women will need protection services.
The UNICEF official says these are astonishing numbers for a country that was progressing pretty well, but with this conflict is now facing again a very serious crisis. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to a special report on Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Turning now to the COVID-19 crisis, the world is entering a third year of the pandemic, and the World Health Organization reports a dramatic surge in cases that have hit Africa in recent weeks. In the week of December 6th through the 12th, the WHO reported confirmed cases nearly doubled on the continent to about 185,000 for the week. Much of the increase is attributed to the rapidly spreading Omicron variant of the virus, especially in southern Africa. Overall, the continent has confirmed more than 9 million COVID-19 cases and about 700,000 deaths. Around the world, the WHO reports more than 273 million confirmed cases and nearly 5.5 million deaths, with infections also rising sharply in recent weeks. Less than a half of African nations have vaccinated more than 10% of their populations, while developed countries have vaccinated 60% or more of their residents. The vaccines must be imported, and the WHO and African governments have reported delays in shipments of donated and purchased doses. The shortages of COVID-19 vaccines endured by most African countries this year have fired the quest for the continent to begin manufacturing jabs as soon as possible. The Africa Centers of Disease Control says only 5 countries have the capacity to produce vaccines at the moment, but they're being held back by the refusal of the big pharmaceutical companies who've developed the jabs to share their formulas and transfer technology to Africa. Darren Taylor has more.
The Africa CDC says only Egypt, Ethiopia, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia are currently able to make vaccines, with South Africa being the front runner. Together, these countries produce a tiny fraction of jabs for a variety of diseases distributed across the continent every year.
99% of our vaccines are currently imported. Only 1% produced locally. It's unacceptable if we go back with the...
Dr. Nika Ndembi is chief science advisor for the Africa's CDC. It's securing funding for the continent to begin developing and manufacturing homegrown vaccines. Only 3 firms, all in South Africa, are on course to achieve this in the near future. One of these is Cape Town-based AfriGen, which has built a lab to start making COVID-19 vaccines using mRNA technology. Its CEO is Pietrute Blanche.
We have the facility completed with basic equipment. We are now doing the training and developing the drug substance and drug product. We require the tech partner to really fast-track us. We need a tech partner with experience. And we need to hire people. We're gonna recruit production pharmacists, bioprocessing engineers, analytical chemists, molecular biologists, recruiting about 20 people in the next 3 to 6 months.
Ndembi says African drug manufacturers are stepping up to prevent further shortages of COVID-19 vaccines as the pandemic rages on in Africa.
That's clear. It's not something going to be happening next day. It's already happening. We see countries like Egypt, they have expanded their production line and they aim at producing over billions doses of Sinovac by 2022.
He says a realistic target for Africa is to produce at least 60% of vaccines it needs annually by 2040.
It's possible to be a powerhouse for vaccine manufacturing. It's also possible to have African solution to global problems, but we really have to work collectively and not in a very fragmented way, so we can have it consolidated and so be sure that we meet our continental aspiration.
Ndembi says Africa has the scientific and pharmaceutical talent to make vaccines from scratch, but because it doesn't have the necessary financing, infrastructure, and technology, the people with the skills to develop and make them leave to work in Europe and the United States. Terblanche says AfriGen, in its small way, wants to change this and is scaling up the equipment and technology it needs to make advanced medicines.
We are in discussion with partners to bring monoclonal antibody technology to Africa. It does not exist. Like vaccines, there's no capacity on this continent to make monoclonal antibody, make a biologic. We've started the process now to design a facility and we are sourcing capital to build that facility. That will make us absolutely unique. We will have an mRNA facility with the COVAX vaccine, which will become commercial once it's met its objectives and the promise to Africa.
In addition to AfriGen's production plans, the South African company Aspen Pharmacare is close to becoming the first in Africa to distribute and price a COVID-19 vaccine for sale across the continent. US-based Johnson & Johnson said late last month it was preparing to grant a license to Aspen to produce an African COVID-19 vaccine to be called Aspenovax, using substances provided by J&J. The Africa CDC says the continent must be ready to make vaccines from scratch at massive scale before the next pandemic hits, so that it's never again forced to depend on supplies from other parts of the world. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The United Nations Children's Fund says the debt crisis affecting many African countries has intensified since the outbreak of COVID-19. This, as health and socio-economic problems attributed to the pandemic have forced governments to expand their budgets. Although the continent has so far been spared the worst of the pandemic in terms of cases and deaths, its various economies have been hard hit, especially in poorer, smaller countries that depend on a single resource or sector. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more on the story.
According to the World Bank, COVID-19 plunged the region into its first recession in over 25 years, and economic activity in sub-Saharan Africa contracted by 2% in 2020. Matthew Kamis is UNICEF's regional advisor for social policy for Eastern and Southern Africa. He says many African governments, due to the current debt crisis, may have to cut their budget next year rather than borrow more to solve growing health problems. He says this could further affect the delivery of basic social services and aggravate social, economic, and long-term development problems among countries on the continent. Kamis says the pandemic has led to the biggest economic contractions ever recorded. That includes a huge impact on unemployment and the loss of income. He says the level of food insecurity on the continent has increased by 10%.
Lost decade of income progress. The average person living in Africa, their level of consumption is the same as it was back in the year 2011, which is just extraordinary. Another huge issue has been the reemergence of basic health threats like malaria, tuberculosis, even child deaths due to mothers not being able to deliver their babies in a safe health facility. And that's also because of different services being disrupted.
He says tourism and trade were impacted by the closure of borders and various lockdown measures instituted by countries to keep the spread of the virus. Kamis says a recent report from the African Development Bank on economic outlook for the continent shows that an estimated 30 million people were pushed into extreme poverty last year, and another 40 million people this year.
So we can estimate that somewhere around 70 million additional persons have been pushed into extreme poverty. And if we take a step back and just look at the big picture, we have now crossed the 500 million benchmark, which means that more than a half billion persons are now living in extreme poverty, which is almost 150 million more persons than just 20 years ago.
He says prior to the pandemic, 4 out of 5 people were living in poverty. The situation has aggravated significantly. He says governments should work assiduously to keep the spread of the virus so that economic activities can recover and operate at full capacity. UNICEF official Matthew Kamis says his organization has been advocating for the expansion of cash transfer programs that have a positive effect on African economies.
But we also know that giving cash to vulnerable families has many other benefits. It has impacts on hunger and nutrition. It helps get kids back to school and learning. It reduces levels of violence against children and women. And it even has great benefits on things like mental health. So there are many other benefits to expanding cash transfer programs beyond the pure economic returns.
Kamis says before the pandemic, around 100 million children in sub-Saharan Africa were not attending school, and that COVID-related lockdowns and school closures impacted 250 million children throughout the continent. He says, reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry.
And that wraps up this special edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com.